This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to Market Talk. In today's episode, we'll cover the path of interest rates in the US and the UK, what's behind the recovery in equity markets, and why possible tariffs on non-US films could have ramifications far beyond Hollywood. My name's Harry. I'm a content manager in L&G's asset management business based in London. And today I'm joined by Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy Asia, who joins us from Hong Kong. Welcome back to the pod, Ben. How have you been?
I've been great, thanks, Harry. There's been lots of holidays here in Asia, actually. It's Labor Day, 1st of May, lots of holidays there. Also Buddha's birthday. I took the opportunity to go to Okinawa, which was interesting and exciting and a great place to visit. And yeah, and Japan was on their Golden Week holiday as well. So pretty busy.
Holiday season here in the UK too. We've had all the May bank holidays. So everyone's been either enjoying the sun or back in the office frantically trying to catch up. So let's kick off looking at the latest economic data out of the US. From the summaries that I've seen over the last few days, I get the impression that both GDP and employment figures have been okay, or at least not bad enough to point to an imminent recession. What's your overall reading of the numbers and what they tell us about the US economy today?
That's right. The economic data has been okay. I say that GDP, Q1 GDP in the US came in, was pretty weak. It was actually negative. So that sounds as though I'm talking total rubbish, doesn't it? So that was negative, but it's a bit of a funny one. And that's because a lot of US businesses, people were front-loading imports. So they were importing loads of stuff before tariffs kick in, knowing that there probably would be tariffs. And the way that GDP is calculated is that if you import stuff, that subtracts from domestic growth because it's basically someone else making it. It's not you. So it's a negative impact. I suspect that'll get revised away in the future because they'll find somewhere that those imports were put, some inventories or something. So I suspect it won't end up being negative forever, or at least at the very least, that negative number is an exaggeration of what was going on. If you look at the underlying domestic demand, retail sales, industrial production, that was fine. We also got some sentiment indicators, manufacturing ISM, the service sector ISM. This is a survey that's been going on for decades. So it's quite a good indication of what is going on in terms of underlying manufacturing, underlying service sector, and quite real time as well. And those surveys, they did fall a little bit, but actually fell less than expected and still hovering around the break-even number, sort of 50, which is somewhere between expansion and contraction. So again, no sign yet that there is a imminent recession. We did get some confidence surveys outside of those ISMs that suggest weaker activity. There is this disconnect that we've had for many months now between sentiment surveys being weak and actual economic data being okay. And there's probably some politics behind that, isn't it? If you ask someone how they're feeling, it depends which side of the politics you are, I think is your answer. So maybe that's impacting these sentiment surveys, but actual economic data has been fine. But we wouldn't expect anything different, to be honest, even if we believe that, or even if there is a risk of a downturn in the US. It's unlikely to come through right now. It's probably going to be felt in the next few weeks in terms of actual economic activity, but we only get that data in a few weeks after that. So it is too early. So yeah, the data's been fine. We also had some reasonably good employment data out of the US, actually better than expected again. Seems as though the job market in the US is humming totally fine. So that's been fine, but it doesn't, unfortunately, let us totally reduce or totally remove the risk of a downturn or a recession in the US. If that happens, we will see that data in the future.
I read an interesting note from a member of our asset allocation team yesterday in an email about the difficulty of interpreting US economic data at the moment because of something he called reflexivity. If I understood the idea correctly, it was that economists think the main way policy shocks will be transmitted to the real economy in the US is through confidence. So if uncertainty about tariffs paralyzes investment and durable goods spending, that could lead to recession. But if the market recovery underpins confidence, then firms and consumers can keep spending and that wouldn't necessarily happen. Does this suggest perhaps that even quite small positive surprises could be quite significant in this current market?
It's very difficult, this concept that you just said. So basically what we're saying is that, look, if the stock market falls 20%, then people are suffering because they think their wealth has disappeared. 20% of their wealth, their equity wealth, is gone. So maybe they will be spending less in the future. Their confidence will be lower. Same with credit spreads, right? If credit spreads widen on the back of some news, some headlines, then ultimately that does impact businesses because it would be more expensive for them to borrow. Credit spreads are higher. The other part is the dollar. You know, if the dollar strengthens, which is often the case, not this time, but often the case in a sell-off because people rush to safety. The dollar is seen, historically has been seen as safe. That means that if you've borrowed loads of dollars, if you're an emerging market, for example, the dollar's rallied. The thing that you've borrowed has gone up in value. Again, that's impacting you. So markets in themselves can impact economic activity. I think that's what they're saying, and it feeds back on itself. So the fact that markets have actually recovered quite a bit, and we could talk about that in a minute if you want, but markets have recovered quite a lot, that suggests perhaps that recession risk, downturn risk in the US has also reduced somewhat. But it becomes very circular because our jobs in investment management is to look at economic data, forecast economic data in order to try and forecast what we think is going to happen to markets. But if we're using markets as an input into economic data, then that becomes rather circular, doesn't it? So, yeah, it's very, very tricky. What I would say is that it can exacerbate downturns. 2008 is a great example. That was a recession triggered by the US housing market, but made a lot worse because credit conditions froze. When credit spreads ballooned wider, you couldn't borrow any money. So the market made it worse. But it can also work the other way around, where markets can be propped up, perhaps by the Federal Reserve cutting interest rates or by confidence and leadership or whatever it might be. And that can make a downturn either not happen at all or a lot lower than what it could be in the past. And maybe that's what we're currently looking at.
So I've got a familiar dilemma coming up, which is that I want to ask you about expectations of the US Central Bank, the Fed, ahead of its next meeting. But as luck would have it, that meeting happens later today, meaning we don't know what was decided yet. But by the time this podcast airs, our listeners will know what happened. With that caveat out the way, what are markets expecting ahead of the meeting?
This is some sort of Back to the Future crazy stuff that you're coming up with, isn't it? So stuff that you will know about that I don't know about right now. Well, so the Fed is meeting, as you say, on Wednesday evening in terms of the policy decision. The expectation is for no change in policy. I think it would be a bit of a big shock if that wasn't the case. So I'm going to say right now, almost certainly the Fed doesn't do anything, and I'll look very stupid when you hear this. But anyway, that is the market expectation, partly because there is no forecast changes by the Fed in this meeting. So they don't update the dot plots and all these sort of things you talk about. So that's one of the reasons why they probably don't cut. Another reason is, like us, we're sort of sitting here waiting to hear more news on potential tariffs, potential negotiations. Don't really know what the impact on markets is going to be in the long term, what impact on the economy is going to be. For now, as we have spoken about earlier, everything seems to be okay. So it doesn't really feel as though they need to be cutting rates. In terms of markets pricing, there are rate cuts priced in. One cut by the July meeting is priced into markets. So not now, but they will, at least what's priced in, they should cut interest rates at some point fairly soon. Maybe 325 basis points cuts by year end. But, you know, this is all to be determined in the next few weeks. Since the 31st of March, so, if, you know, the Liberation Day on the 2nd of April, so let's just take before 31st of March, the two-year Treasury yield is 10 basis points lower. So it is not a huge amount, but it is a bit lower, just factoring in perhaps the requirement by the Federal Reserve to cut interest rates a little bit quicker than before Liberation Day. The 10-year yield, interestingly, is 9 basis points higher. So again, that's suggesting that there's no massive concern by investors that this is a definite recession coming around. If anything, actually, longer term yields have gone up. Maybe there's an inflation perspective in there, maybe longer term inflation. But the interesting thing is that the curves has steepened. So 2-year yields have gone down, 10-year yields have gone up. So that's probably the biggest thing to have said about the reaction since Liberation Day.
We've got a similar sort of difficulty with the Bank of England in terms of the timing, in that I think believe it's meeting on Thursday. US and UK interest rates are currently basically exactly the same. Are expectations diverging between the two?
Yeah, you're right. So 2-year yields, both in the US and in the UK, are just under 4%, 3.8% as we're taping here on Wednesday. 10-year yields are similar, I think sort of roughly 4.5%, a little bit less. So yeah, pretty similar. But the reaction since Liberation Day has been different. I mentioned before, in the US, we've had that curve steepening, 2-year yields down a bit, 10-year yields up a bit. We've also seen steepening in the UK, but everything's gone down. So yields have fallen in the UK. 2-year yields about 0.4% lower, 10-year yields sort of 0.16% lower, 16 basis points lower. So everything has gone down. And then outside of the US, and this is true in Europe as well, mainland Europe as well as the UK, yields generally lower, giving the impression that investors believe that central banks will have to cut interest rates. There's a growth headwind there from what was announced on Liberation Day and other things as well. I guess there's more headwind, and that probably will materialize on Thursday in an interest rate cut by the Bank of England. Investors, markets are pricing in roughly a 25 basis point rate cut, and then cuts sort of once a quarter going forward. The interesting thing on Thursday, first of all, do they cut? I think it's likely, but there's a chance that they don't, I suppose, or there's a chance that they even cut by 50 basis points. And perhaps even if they don't cut by 50 basis points, there could be some votes for 50 basis points and the rhetoric around that as well. And that will inform investors as to whether or not there is going to be one cut a quarter, or perhaps they will start cutting once per meeting. That would be my bias if there was a shock. It could be the Bank of England suggests that they'll be cutting a little bit faster than currently priced into markets.
I was looking at a chart showing the S&P 500 equity index, the big US index yesterday, and it was just a hair off its pre-Liberation Day level at the start of April before the reciprocal tariff announcement led to that big drop that we saw, as well as the economic data that we've already discussed. Are there any other developments that have supported the quite significant recovery in equities that we've seen over the past month?
Yeah, that's right. So taking the 31st of March again as the starting point and looking at the close yesterday, so that would be Tuesday the 6th of May, the S&P 500 was down 0.1%, so pretty much flat. And that's the same for UK, European sort of broad indices as well. Interestingly, there are some that actually rallied to the NASDAQ over that period, up 2.3%. I've got the MSCI Emerging Market Index. A lot of emerging markets were targeted by Liberation Day tariffs, but that was up 3.3%. Outside of equities, a little bit of weakness. We've seen credit spreads over that period about 10 basis points wider. Not a huge amount, but you know, a little bit of widening. Maybe they were just too tight to start off with. So certainly not a huge amount to worry about. And like I said, if anything, equity markets, some of them got up. And I think a lot of that is around the de-escalation that's occurred since the initial announcements, the delay of the reciprocal tariffs, some deals being spoken about. Even I saw overnight China and US trade representatives meeting this weekend in Switzerland. So that would be a very positive a move between China and the US, which is believed to be the most difficult bilateral negotiation. But also I saw overnight that, and you alluded to this in the introduction, didn't you? The tariff potentially on foreign-made movies going into the US. Lots of US movies are made outside of the US, some of it because of tax breaks that are given by country. And maybe the US doesn't appreciate that, doesn't like that, and would like to even up that playing field. But the interesting part about it is that that would open up not just manufactured goods to tariffs, which is what we've been discussing so far, but we would start to think about the service sector, movies being a service, and lots of other parts of the service sector. These are probably all part of the negotiations that are going on anyway between US and other countries, and bilateral negotiations elsewhere as well. But just an interesting one that if it opens that up, we start to worry about a whole different group of sectors as well, don't we?
Last time we caught up 2 weeks ago, US earnings season was just getting going. We've now had a lot of the big names sharing their results, including several of the so-called Magnificent Seven, those giant tech companies out of the US that drove stock market returns in 2023 and 2024. How have they been doing against expectations?
In general, the S&P 500, I think over 80% has now announced their Q1 earnings results. I think I mentioned it when we chatted last time that expectations were for earnings to be up sort of 5% or so, but they always beat. And again, what a surprise, they beat it. They beat again. And so the numbers, they're going to beat by about 10%. Earnings are going to grow by 10% compared to the same quarter last year, which is very good. The tech sector, for example, in the S&P 500, up 27% earnings compared to the same quarter last year. Yeah, you mentioned the Magnificent Seven, bit of a mixed bag in terms of the immediate market reaction. Interestingly, a company like Tesla announced relatively weak results, but actually did very well straight away. And maybe that was partly to do with Elon Musk saying he's going to focus a little bit more time on the company. And then away from that, some rose, some fell, but generally okay. NVIDIA, the big one, that's the one we're waiting for out of the seven. We've had six of them. NVIDIA, those results come in a couple of weeks' time. They're always a bit later. 28th of May, I believe, is for that one. So we'll be looking at that as a company the size of an asset class and see what they come up with.
So turning from equities and bonds to commodities, I saw over the weekend that OPEC has agreed to increase oil production from June, building on a similar increase that took place this month. Why is this such big news?
Yeah, oil has been one of the places where we've seen some weakness. And, you know, if you want to believe in a US downturn, a global downturn, and you start looking at things, equity markets, that doesn't show it, credit markets, maybe a little bit. Oil down 17%. Since the 31st of March. So that's a chunky move. That's Brent I'm talking about here. So is that due to potential concerns about demand, which would be to do with a growth risk? Well, maybe a little bit, but most of it, I think, is the supply side. So you mentioned OPEC, Saudi Arabia announcing that production will increase. The chatter is that they're annoyed with a few of the OPEC members that perhaps are producing more than they had agreed. So I think that increase in supplies is behind some of this fall in oil price. Now, that's very positive for consumers, particularly in the US, which seems to get a direct feed through for their petrol costs, gasoline prices from oil. So that's going to free up some spending potentially to be spent on higher priced goods being imported with tariffs. Also good for Europe. Natural gas prices have also fallen too, and that's really important for Europe. So that's good for consumption, also good for inflation. So, you know, that's something that would keep headline inflation under control, or at least offset potentially some of the upward side to inflation that we're seeing from tariffs. So, yeah, all told, pretty good, unless you're a seller of oil, I guess.
Another story from the weekend papers was relatively big moves in a number of low-yielding currencies. What was behind these big moves in what are often thought of as quite quiet parts of the market?
Yeah, I saw a report. So the Taiwanese dollar, it rallied versus the US dollar over the sort of the holiday weekend, this weekend gone. And the move was a 19 standard deviation event. So, you know, I did some stats at university. 19, if it was a normally distributed outcomes, I think someone's, again, I'm just repeating what I saw on the internet, so it may be wrong, but 19 standard deviation event expected to happen less than once in the age of the universe. So I guess that suggests that at least the Taiwanese dollar, US dollar is not normally distributed, or we've just seen a once in a universe reaction. No, so joking apart, I think what's happened to some degree, we do know that the dollar has been weaker through the whole of April, really, and even before that. And this chat about, you know, is this the end of US exceptionalism? Are there some other assets that, you know, are the new flight to safety assets, maybe concerns about US fiscal policy, selling treasuries. There's definitely been a whiff of selling of the dollar, and we've seen that in the market reaction. So the dollar has been weaker. Lots of other currencies have been stronger. And perhaps over the weekend, the holiday weekend, that was exacerbated by a lack of liquidity. There was also news reports that I was reading from Reuters, for example, talking about a potential deal between Taiwan and the US about, you know, agreement as part of the trade agreement, an agreement to increase the value of the Taiwanese dollar and lower the US dollar. And that's something that would, I guess, benefit US exporters as well, to have a weaker dollar. So that might be part of agreements. That's been denied by everyone, but I guess these sorts of discussions are impacting market behavior. So those rumors, the relatively illiquid markets, maybe some big trades that have been put on by hedge funds that were going the other way around, that were being stopped out. I think these all exacerbated the move and led to quite a big reaction. So some of that already got offset in the days afterwards. So I do think it was a little bit too far, too fast. But the underlying trend of a weaker dollar and stronger currencies everywhere else, that, like I said, has been going on for a few weeks. And it's something that we do have to bear in mind when we're talking about markets and talking about inflation, talking about relative costs for trading, etc. So yeah, something definitely that we can talk about in future podcasts.
We've reached that point in the podcast again, Ben. What's your number of the week?
I got 1.1 million, and that is the number of visitors to Hong Kong over this Labor Day, this sort of golden week, this hot holiday period, up 22% on 2024. So this, I guess, the recovery of certainly from mainland China, tourism, that's really taking off. And yeah, I was quite pleased that I was in Okinawa and didn't have to sort of deal with 1.1 million extra people trying to take public transports and stuff like that. So Okinawa is pretty busy, but it certainly wasn't. I think the population of Okinawa is not that much more than 1.1 million. So yeah, Hong Kong was busy last weekend.
Well, thanks very much for your time today, Ben. Pleasure talking to you as always. And thank you to all our listeners as well.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.